Disclaimer. The views and opinions that you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. My name is Zach Birchie. Jacob's here. But
hello.
Yeah, not the usual Jacob that is a part of the show. Returning guest, very happy to have him back on the show. This is the founder of Faku.net, which is a pornography site. we had Jacob on the show about 2 years ago in 2015, right before Faku went legit. And now it's been 2 years, and they just made a major announcement, so I'm really excited to have Jacob back on the show. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for inviting me, Zach. It's good to be back, and as you noted, it's been a little over 2 years since we last spoke, so lots of stuff going on. It's really cool.
Yeah, right. Well, before we get to your, you know, exciting acquisition news and all of that stuff, tell me a little bit, like, so you went... 2 years ago, we talked about basically the idea of going legit. So this is something, it's kind of similar to the Crunchyroll story, right? Like, you start out with, you know, piracy, basically, and your connections in the industry and your ambition lead it to the point where you're now a legitimate platform with all rights and everything taken care of. You know, it's legit now. So can you tell us a little bit, ultimately, what, like, looking back on that process... Like, what was the hardest thing about it? What do you think the biggest challenges were? Was there anything unexpected?
So it's been we last spoke 2.5 years ago, right before we were took Faku officially legit. Like, we had started working with some publishers, and I think we had put out our first book when we had spoken last, but we hadn't done like the full 100% change to legitimacy. Probably the biggest thing I was worried about at the time was whether our users who were used to, pirating things and not paying for things, I should say, mm-hmm. Or not having the opportunity to pay for things. I was worried about whether those users and customers would actually like materialize once we said, okay, now everything we do from this point forward is official. You know, it costs money, you're supporting the industry, you're supporting these artists in Japan. My biggest worry back then was, would people actually, you know, support that change? Fortunately, people have, and the support has been tremendous, and we've been able to grow a lot in the past 3 years since we first went legit, 2 years since 100%. So
that
was my biggest worry at the start.
Well, did you find that your user base changed?
We definitely, interestingly, before we went legit, we had a much bigger worldwide presence. And once we made the change to legitimacy, it sort of contracted into the United States. So much more of our much higher percentage of our user base is based in the United States, which surprised me. I think it's more a problem with just, you know, access to payment options and things around the world.
Yeah. Interesting. So with that demographic change, like, what did you notice right away? Like, what's your bread and butter in terms of your business?
Definitely the simul-publishing, the magazines, I think, is what our users are the most interested in, because it's daily content that we give to our customers. So we simul-publish 7 monthly magazines now, which is insane.
That is crazy.
One of them is quarterly, but it's so 7 sort of Shonen Jumps every month. That's definitely our bread and butter, is getting that content out as quickly to our users as possible. And I think it's what our users at the moment are most interested in, is just going on to Faku every single day and reading the latest releases.
Right. So that so that sort of became like your number one business is simultaneously publishing the hentai manga anthologies that are in Japan. Are there whales out there that you don't have that you want, like publications where you're like, we would really love to have this on our roster, but for whatever reason, it's not happening just yet?
Fortunately, our first partner, Wani Magazine, is one of the biggest in Japan, if not the biggest, and they have what I consider to be the best content out there. They have the number one monthly magazine, like literally the Shonen Jump of hentai, which we are publishing on Faku, and we've been publishing for over 2 years. So in regards to like content I wish we could have, we honestly already have it on Faku.
Yeah.
Even me personally, like the stuff that I want to read, I can just go on Faku and read it.
All right. Well, mission accomplished.
Yeah. So we got lucky out of the gate where our first partner was sort of the number one partner.
That's cool. That's very cool. So with that demographic change and with that audience change, obviously you started looking towards the future, and like what you were going to do next. When did you feel like you had the simul publishing like under control enough to where you could move on to the next phase?
Early on with the simul publishing, I set some sort of internal goals that I communicated internally that were like, oh, hey, once we reach this amount of paying subscribers and users, we can pick up another magazine. And once we hit this amount, we can pick up another. And an important thing for us was to sort of get a user base that could sustain like our core business and all of our staff and all of our expenses so that we could just continue doing what we're doing. And once we hit that point, we were able to look at, you know, new things like the anime, like, other things we have in the works. So that would probably be my answer to that.
Okay. All right. And how did you determine what do we move into next? Because obviously you just made this big announcement about, acquiring Kitty Media, which is a hentai publisher in Japan. So that was clearly the next step you took. But, were there other considerations? It wasn't just an obvious, like, well, next we should do anime, because there isn't really anyone doing that.
Yeah, so one of the cool things at Faku, we're a completely independent company. We never took any investment from any outside, VC or companies or publishers or from Japan. It was all, we built it all up from nothing. So what I sort of tell our staff and speak about at conventions when I'm asked similar questions is, there's no like closed doors to what Faku does or what it can become. There's only like which door we choose to open next.
Hmm.
By that, I mean like, we may come into the office after Christmas break, which is coming up, and say, the next thing we want to do is this or this or this. And we can, we have the ability to do that because we're not beholden to any other interests other than our own.
Yeah, right. That's cool. And it's the magic of being independent, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's let us do really cool things over the past 2 years. We did, we have like a line of skateboards. We did the Kickstarter with Toshio Maeda where we, republished
right.
Legend of the Overfiend. We brought him to do a signing in our local city here. We're based in Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to do all these really cool things that we just want to do.
That's cool. How did the skateboards come about?
So the skateboards were me being like, I want to, we reached this moment where there were more artists and publishers in Japan that wanted to work with us than we were capable of supporting, with our output. So I wanted to collab with all these artists who I've been fans of for years and years in a way that was very unique. And the skateboard is sort of like, as a canvas, I think is more, more Western, more American than what a Japanese artist might be used to. So it was a way to collab with artists that I wanted to work with that we didn't have the bandwidth to work with in that moment. And also to create like a really cool, unique piece of art, on a skateboard.
Right. Yeah. That's cool. How has that been doing for you?
We've reprinted, I think all of our skateboards like 3 or 4 times, past their initial print runs.
Congratulations. So,
yeah, we don't measure it too extensively, but they've certainly broken even on the cost to produce them. And I think it's just a really cool thing to have. If you've ever been to one of our booths at a convention, we typically have a big wall with all of our, erotic skateboards, which is cool.
Right, yeah. Are you at a point financially where you just don't need to sweat it?
No, we're definitely always,
okay.
keep we're not at the point where we get to just do whatever, you know, whatever we want any day, but we act pretty intelligently, I think, with the decisions we make.
So what challenges have you, regarding that, what challenges are you running up against when it comes to marketing?
Yeah, so marketing is our biggest weakness as a company, and we've done, in the traditional sense of marketing, we have never done any marketing at all. No, you know, paying for advertising or banner ads or email blasts or all of that stuff.
Right.
So we've never actually done any traditional marketing, which I think is a weakness, and I think it's something we'll start doing hopefully in 2018. So as a result, our current marketing strategies are a lot of like word of mouth, working with cool artists, like we sponsor some esports, you know, personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways we sort of get the word out. And we do cool things, like on Valentine's Day, we did a Faku dating website. So we did this whole like chat roulette style dating website where you would choose like an avatar from one of the hentai chapters and then chat with random people. And that blew up really big. So we typically, and that's sort of because we don't have these like endless resources, we have to be like more clever about the ways we do marketing.
Scrappy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So, I mean, in terms of like, so as somebody who works with pornography, is the challenge basically like figuring out who you can approach? Because like a lot of people have really, from what I understand from other people I've talked to that work with pornography for a living, like it becomes really challenging and difficult to like try and interact with the mainstream when that's what you're selling, because people are so prejudiced against it. And like, even like, you know, credit card companies and stuff like that will be challenging and sometimes really awful to work with as a result of them, you know, condescending to you basically, and you know, getting up on their moral high horse about the kind of, you know, product that you're selling. Have you run into any of that? Is that a worry for you rolling forward with your marketing?
We've definitely run into it in the past. As an example, you know, we can't use the Twitter ads platform, right? Because they ban any and all adult content from advertising on the service. Same thing's true for, you know, Facebook and all of the big social media apps. I think actually Facebook like just straight up deleted our page years ago. And that is concerning as those platforms grow larger and larger and all encompassing, like out of the gate, they're like turning away anything that is sort of targeting adults like us or like, you know, anything that's questionable. Like we couldn't really do YouTube ads. We couldn't do, it is difficult. And as a result, our marketing would have to focus other adult websites.
Which is kind of
lame.
Well, it's very limiting, right?
Yeah.
Like you're only going to reach a certain audience with that.
Yeah. And that's one of the many reasons why I've sort of tried to set up Faku as more of a brand than a, you know, porn website. It's sort of like a brand first.
Right. And you can kind of abstract it out that way and get people to recognize it as a brand name that they associate with sort of erotic content, but that would be the strongest association, is like, this is sort of an edgy erotic brand that I don't necessarily just see as a porn store, you know?
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. And we, you know, and I want people to think of us as not just a porn store. We celebrated our anniversary on December 1st and someone sent me an email and it was like a really nice email where it was like, you know, I don't think of Faku is a porn website. I think what you're doing is publishing like art, and I support you guys because I love that you're like doing that. And I was like, oh shit, this is exactly what I want people to take away from what we're doing. Like, it's not just porn. It's like, it's more than that.
Well, you're more like, I remember our previous conversation, you've always been more interested in getting recognition for these actual artists and instead of, you know, treating them like they are second-class citizens or people to be not mentioned, basically. Like, let's pretend all this stuff is just in the shadows and we don't have to actually look at it. Like, you've always been more interested in earning recognition for these people and celebrating them as artists. And I personally think that that's a pretty admirable goal. And so, like, with that in mind, that must be, like, if that's your personal goal, that must be very, like, that's an uphill climb. That's an uphill climb. Getting people to appreciate, getting especially Americans to appreciate erotic art of any kind is almost impossible. Like, it's really hard. Like, if you're Stanley, if you're Stanley Kubrick, you can kind of get there, but they will still dismiss your erotic movies. Like, they'll still dismiss them. It's amazing.
Yeah. It is a shame that in general, you know, there's more people are more prude than I would like, I would say.
Sure.
Especially the big companies like Google and Apple. And referencing what we were discussing before, you know, we could never do like a mobile app. The biggest – one of the many questions I get asked before it was always anime. Oh, do hentai anime. But the second biggest was always, oh, why is there no Faku mobile app? And I'm like, oh, well.
I mean, so is that chiefly what you're running into there, like with Apple?
Yeah, and again, it's actually a really interesting problem I foresee for us in like the long-term future, where you say like I started using Apple Pay a lot, right? Like there's a supermarket near my apartment, a Trader Joe's, and I go there and sometimes I forget my wallet and I just use my phone and use Apple Pay and I'm like, "Oh, this is so convenient and nice." And I hope everyone like uses Apple Pay, and then I'm like, wait a minute, Apple doesn't let you use this payment service for adult stuff. And I'm like, oh, like what happens in that future dystopian world, right, where it's like everyone's just using Apple Pay, everyone's just using Google Pay, and none of them work with adult companies. I'm like, that's a horrible world. Like all the sex toy stores, all the adult publishers like us, like erotic movies, like...
Yeah, no, well, yeah, it has a chilling effect on that kind of, I mean, speech. It has a very chilling effect on that kind of speech. That is a kind of a scary future.
Yeah, that's my real fear these days is like 10 years from now, like what happens when we're in that world. But I guess we'll see.
Well, I mean, so you just need to get big and powerful enough to buy congressmen and have extremely influential lobbyists. That's
well, apparently, yeah. Apparently, anyone can get into Congress these days.
Yeah. Anyway, so a couple of little while ago here, you announced a major acquisition. You bought Kitty Media. You just bought them.
Yeah, I've known the guys at Media Blasters or some of the staff at Media Blasters for a while, and Kitty Media was their hentai anime imprint.
Right.
And they've been, you know, it's been operating for 20 plus years, I think.
Yeah.
Literally, when I grew up and I was a teenager, I would go to FYE and like see the VHS tapes and the DVDs that were like covered up, you know, like which it was the local like CD video store where I lived.
Right.
There would be like Kitty Media titles there, you know, like Kite and Another Lady Innocent, and they even did Legend of the Overfiend back then.
Right.
So it's crazy. It's an awesome opportunity to work with or to, you know, take over an established brand like that and do some cool things with it.
So why Kitty Media? There's other hentai labels you could have picked up. You could have basically outright. You could have worked more directly with specifically a Japanese studio. Why Kitty Media?
Sort of alluding to what I had sort of just said, you know, Kitty Media does have this established reputation outside of Japan as being the biggest and one of the only hentai anime publishers. And me growing up around that label sort of
made it the perfect choice. Right.
Yeah, made it the perfect choice. And coming out of the gate of the acquisition and being able to work with the content that they already have licenses for, they already have dubbed, they already have subbed. It gave us a library of content to launch with.
Right. Wow. Okay.
And even outside of that library of content, we're continuing to work with Media Blasters as a partner to license new anime and new hentai anime and launch it under the Kitty Media label and on Faku at the same time.
So, the idea is then to build Kitty Media as a brand additionally, I would imagine.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not sure where we'll take the brand in the future. In the short term, Kitty Media's digital library will be up on Faku for our users to enjoy.
Right.
And yeah, I'm not sure what we'll do with it in the future. I can say that we're already working on some new licenses for new titles in coordination with Media Blasters, and we're planning things like we'll launch the hentai anime for a title, and we'll also publish the hentai manga that the title is based on at the same time. So there's lots of cool opportunities like that, which we're pursuing.
Well, you're sort of flirting with or hinting at the idea of doing non-erotic anime, just doing, you know, regular anime. Is that serious? Is that real? Like, do you really want to get into, like, will Faku eventually have non-H titles, like, available for streaming?
I don't foresee us doing anything like that anytime soon. I would say that there are titles that are non-erotic that would make sense on Faku. Like, and another anime that I love and I think is one of the greatest anime of all time is Golden Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Great show, right?
Yeah.
I think Discotech has the license for it. And that's a title which is sort of in the ecchi sphere, ecchi comedy, which I think would do really well on Faku. And it's also on Crunchyroll and other streaming services. Like, that's something I would be interested in.
Yeah, so like ecchi comedies, which that makes
sense. But like One Piece, we would never even think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure. I mean, of course not. Yeah, but you know, like the Kitty Media Library has some non-H stuff in it.
Yeah, it actually has some really cool stuff. And upon learning more about Kitty Media when we were in negotiations, like, it was really cool to see like just how much stuff they have put out over the years.
Do you think this is a big area? Because, like, there aren't a lot of legal streaming hentai places. Insofar as I can tell, there's not a tremendous number of them. Do you think this is a real, like, people are leaving money on the table? Like, do you think this is a real growth area?
I can't say for sure one way or the other. I think that for us right now, it makes sense for Faku to add hentai anime. And I think that giving it to our users is something that's going to keep them sort of happier and coming back to Faku more, which is what we want. Mm-hmm. For them to be more satisfied with their subscription, with the website as a whole. And it's something that we're able to do, like, as an example, we're going to be adding Kitty Media's catalog to Faku through the subscription for you to stream, and you know, Blu-ray quality. It'll be more on the Netflix end of quality than on like the other end. And
sure.
We're doing all that with no additional like subscription cost or tiers or anything. So it's just like a benefit for being a subscriber alongside the manga. Longer term, whether that turns into like a whole nother thing, we'll see. I'm sort of like internally setting some goals, some like 2-year goals for like, okay, if we sort of see this kind of response 2 years from now, we can go harder with this, or we can sort of, you know, reel it back in. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch.
With the skateboards as an example, I didn't think that there was a huge market for erotic skateboards. The hookups exists, but they just steal artwork and put it on skateboards. So.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Goddamn.
Yeah, and have been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But I didn't think there was a huge market for that, but it ended up that people were receptive to what we wanted to do, which was cool.
That's cool.
Right now we want to do hentai anime and bring over some more titles. So I'm hopeful that people are receptive and supportive of that.
Right now you're really approaching it as a value add for your existing subscribers and potentially a lure for new subscribers to come in as an add-on to the manga that they're reading, but not like we're going to get real hard into streaming video anime. Like, that's going to become our business. That's not necessarily your focus.
Exactly, yeah. And on top of that, we will be offering like digital downloads of the anime. So if people want to purchase like a, you know, like a digital Blu-ray edition of Kite, you know, we'll be offering that. And so we'll sort of see how people respond to it. I think that like hentai manga, like there's so much piracy of the material.
Yeah.
And the piracy is so established at this point, especially with hentai anime, like that. It's just going to see if like there's enough of an audience that are supportive of it to, you know, to do more with it.
Well, I think a lot of that, like, I think you've probably discovered this too, that just being a one-stop shop, an easy access place where you can get everything at once with one subscription fee and it's just there and it spares people the having to go hunt in, you know, the corners of the internet where they find all the pirated stuff, or wait for it to come out from whatever group is doing it, and, you know, or any of that stuff, or any of the drama associated with, like, scanlations and fansub and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of what you're competing with, weirdly. Like, that's sort of what you're competing with, and provided you can provide a professional experience, a streamlined and professional experience, it feels like that will always trump, you know, what... Man, I hate that you can't use that word anymore.
I know, right? Yeah, I said that the other day, and I'm like, oh, damn.
It will always top whatever experience they might get. So, you know, that's a lure for people, I guess. It's a good way to get them in the door.
Exactly, and that's my thoughts on it as well. And actually, at AWA, which was one of the last conventions we did, where we did a new announcement, we announced, and we haven't announced this on the website yet, so I'm not sure if anyone really knows. We sort of quietly announced that we were getting into games as well. So there will be some games coming to Faku as well. So, and it is sort of getting back into that, oh, you know, Faku is like not just hentai manga, not just hentai anime, not just skateboards. It's sort of like this brand, this all-encompassing, you know, place you can just go and have fun.
Cool. Cool. All right. So, In what ways are you branching out? Like, what can we look forward to in 2018? Like, what are your big? I guess what can you tease for us?
So hopefully before the end of this year, and I know there's only a few weeks left in the year, so we probably won't hit it. But we're hoping for one more big announcement before the end of the year.
Mm.
And it's not at the scale as the Kitty Media stuff, but it's pretty big, and we're. Next year we have some very large plans, which are sort of in the works right now, and there's a lot of going back and forth with Japan on them. But hopefully next year we'll make a huge announcement, and I think it will make a really big splash, because what we've done with Faku I think can be applied to other industries here as well in the States, and certainly in regards to anime and manga. I still think the market is being underserved with anime and especially with manga. So yeah, we have one big announcement we're working on for next year.
Cool. All right. Well, I won't press you for it. I'm sure legally you can't say anything.
yeah. But I'm really excited about it, and it's sort of exactly what I've wanted to do for a while. So.
All right. Excellent. Hey, you should consider sponsoring like skating events. You know.
Yeah, no, that's a cool idea, and that, again, touching back on marketing, that's, like, the path forward for us in marketing, to do things like that.
Like, especially if you present, like, you go to the skating event, and you're like, we're Faku, we make these skateboards.
Yeah. Yeah, and people have been asking us for snowboards and stuff, too, now.
So, oh, shit. That's cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool, and you know, more opportunities to work with these artists and get them known around the world, because there are some incredible artists that we publish that... Like we did Shintaro Kago book. I think Fantagraphics just announced one as well. But we actually published him like a year ago, and he's this like really talented Ero artist.
Yeah, I think our news article wound up having to be corrected on that because it didn't. I don't think it gave you.
I saw that. Yeah.
I don't think they gave you credit for it. I hope they went back and fixed that.
No, it's okay. We actually again sort of alluding back to our marketing being kind of weak. We you know we don't really like. Announce things as much as we can.
Sure.
like we actually put out like two or three books a month, typically two, and we just quietly put them up on Faku, and our users are there, you know, buying and receptive to it, but we don't really dive too far outside of that. So I don't fault you guys.
All right. Well, we want to get things right. You know, that's important. Well that's cool. And I guess we can all sort of, be excited about that, the new announcements next year. Okay, we got some Twitter questions for you. Why don't we get into these?
Yeah, dig into some of these. Excited.
Okay, all right. All right, Patrick Jones asks, what is the legal situation like at Faku when it comes to publishing parody doujinshi and loli content? It seems like a lot of really good lawyers are needed.
So parody content is, you know, it's protected as long as you don't use... original artwork from, you know, whatever show or manga or Harry Potter or whatever you're parodying. So it's generally okay. And if we were to do something like that, we would do it in a lighthearted fashion so that we didn't step on anyone's toes. That said, I don't recommend anyone do parody of like Disney works or anything like that for any artists who are listening.
Yeah. I mean, so do you have like a legal team? I mean, I imagine you do, but like how much do you have to invest in such a thing?
Like we have advisors who we turn to when we have questions. We don't have like a legal team on staff or anything like that. But yeah, we have lawyers who we turn to. And outside of that, you know, we work closely with, I probably talked about it last time actually, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Right.
Who actually became a corporate sponsor of since the last time we spoke. So if you, alongside like DC Comics and Dark Horse, is now Faku as a corporate sponsor of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And they've actually since moved out to Portland, where we are. They're actually like a few blocks from us and operate out of the city. So they're also there as a resource if we ever have any questions or we're worried about something. And that extends to sort of the other part of the question, Lolly, Shota, things that are more controversial in nature. It's all okay. It's all protected. It's just you might have to, you know, argue your case, but it is all in the clear.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, one other little question before I get into these other Twitter questions. For the skateboards, do the original artists who produce the art for the skateboard get royalties from that?
Yes. Yeah. Everything we sell at this point on the website, the subscription, the books, the artists are involved and get royalties for everything.
See, now that is... It's like you're writing a wrong. It's like you're taking what Hookups did and saying, no, here's how you do. Yeah, that's great.
I actually had this... I won't trash talk Hookups too much, though. Goddamn. It's literally still art. And then, like, pass it off as, like... Like, they literally stole art and, like, color drop changed, like, hair color and stuff. And then, like, sold it on a skateboard. No.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. We were going to do this program where it's like, oh, yeah, send us your Hookups board.
We'll send you a pirated, fake
Hookups board, and we'll send you a Faku.
A real one?
Yeah, a real licensed one where the artist is getting paid.
Yeah, cool.
I was going to go and, like, find the artist who they stole from and work with them, but.
Yeah, I mean,
but
like...
whatever. Don't want to ruffle any feathers.
Can you get... I mean, like, so are you commissioning original work for these?
Yeah, everything is an original piece of artwork that is, in most cases, only available on the skate deck. Some of the artists have gone and published that artwork in some of their books after the fact upon, you know, talking with us about it. But yeah, it's all original pieces. And most of them incorporate the Faku logo or brand into the artwork in some way.
Have you considered something like snapback hats and hoodies and t-shirts for a chain like Tilly's or like, skatewear shops, like Zumiez or something like that? Like, because I live in Southern California and there's just nothing but like every other clothing store is a skate shop. And the t-shirts, like half of them are pinups.
Yeah, I I've been thinking about it actually. And it's something I would like to do.
I think you could totally get away with it now. I feel like you could totally pull that off. Like, so long as the art wasn't too salacious, you know, it's like maybe an R-rated pinup or something like that, or PG-13 pinup. I feel like that would totally work. And like
I think there's an appeal in it being so legitimate. Like, this is from the artist.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, absolutely. Well, so then you can charge like designer rates for it. Like, then you can charge $40 for a t-shirt because it's designer and it's original.
It's legit. It's not a hookup stolen piece of art.
I'm telling you, man.
Actually, we did a pop-up store collab with Anime Jungle last year.
Right. I remember that.
And, It was like huge, actually. There were like 300 people who showed up, and it was like just some Faku merch and our books and whatnot. And it was pretty low key advertised on both of our Twitters, but it was the first test of like, you know, what can we do with the Faku brand in like a retail setting like that? And
And I think if you take this art, this pinup art specifically, the stuff that sort of like skirts the line between not quite safe for work, but you know, you wouldn't get kicked out of a theme park for wearing it.
Yeah.
That feels like that's the line. What would you get kicked out of a theme park for wearing? And if you fall on the good side of that line, you could sell it in like a Tilly's. And it seems to me like you've come up with something very good, like legit Hookups is a really good idea. That's just a really great idea. And it's totally expandable, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. And I would say hopefully we'll start doing that. It's something I'm definitely interested in. And it's probably the main barrier right now is probably just a bandwidth issue. Where it's
You need people who can do that kind of thing.
Exactly.
That sort of thing. Anyway, so let's get to these other Twitter questions. Bill, Anime Lightweight asks, since we talked about this a little bit, since some of Kitty Media's catalog isn't technically pornographic like Akisora and Papa To Kiss in the Dark, would Faku ever keep that up and license manga and anime that wasn't hentai per se, but unlikely to get picked up by another publisher? He says stuff like Sugumomo, Dead Tube, and Kagaku na Yatsura spring to mind.
Dead Tube's an interesting one, yeah. I would say yes to that question. We never, you know, I use Crunchyroll every day watching anime, and I use Netflix, and we never want to like encroach on that territory. I think that both of them do a great job with their services, though I wish Netflix would have released Little Witch Academia a little sooner.
Quite a wait.
But yeah, certainly titles that are not a fit for those services, like Akisora and you know, even Legend of the Overfiend is an example. I think they have a home on Faku. Like Golden Boy is like, I think, the perfect example of an anime where it's like that fits on Crunchyroll and Faku at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's, we wouldn't ever like go past that point.
Right. Right. Yeah, you don't want to be perceived as trying to compete with a service like Crunchyroll, but you do want to highlight the uniqueness of your platform and what it allows you to do.
Yeah, right. And they do a great job at Crunchyroll, and I love them very much.
Well, if you're watching, if you watch stuff every day, what are you watching from this current season?
Yeah, so outside of Crunchyroll, I'm watching the Gantz anime. I forgot the name.
Inuyashiki.
That I'm watching on Amazon Prime.
You big Gantz fan?
I am. I read the entire manga and legally from Dark Horse, and and it was good. And I'm enjoying that anime as well.
Cool. Yeah. I. You know what? How did you? Did you watch the live action Gantz movies?
I actually went to the premiere in Boston of the first one.
What did you? So I went to the premiere in L.A. What did you think of that movie?
You know, it wasn't very good, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I feel like I'm struggling. Like, I love that guy's art.
Mm-hmm.
His worldview over time is what I struggle with, because I was cool with it when I was 19, but now that I'm much older, it's not so cool. It's not so cool anymore, you know?
It's a little edgelordy.
Very, I would say, like, the guy is, like, 16 Holden Caulfield type, you know? Like, that's...
Like an example, like I like Kaiji a lot. Kaiji, I think it's a great anime. The manga is great as well, and it is actually, I've recently learned, available legally on Bookwalker or something.
Yeah, Bookwalker.
But the Kaiji anime I love, and I just recently learned that it's in like the edgelordiest of manga magazines in Japan, where it's like they advertise like Zippos and like, you know, the wallet chains.
Yeah, brass knuckles. And
yeah, and like brass knuckles. And it's like for like the young gangster in training in Japan.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's the magazine Kaiji's in. And I'm like, oh, man.
Punk ass bitch weekly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I just love it even more now.
That is really cool. I like that Dirtbag Monthly. That's good.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Chris Adamson wants to know, most of Kitty Media's releases over the last few years have been of much older titles. Do you see Faku getting Kitty into more recent Japanese releases?
Yeah. So following up on something I mentioned earlier, we're working with some Japanese anime publishers right now about the latest and greatest hentai anime. And we'll be coordinating those with manga releases when they exist. So we're not limiting ourselves to just Kitty Media's previously released catalog.
Right. And will you be pursuing new licenses?
Yes, we will. And it's something that Media Blasters is going to be helping us out with, because they have, you know, 20 years experience talking with anime publishers and doing subbing and dubbing. It is worth mentioning, probably. It doesn't make a huge... everything on Faku will be available dubbed as well as subbed, for the most part.
Cool. Cool. All right. Didn't Media Blasters do a bunch of those dubs with like 90s porn stars and stuff?
I think that was them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you went and looked at the Bible Black dub, it has some funny moments in it.
Yeah. Some.
Certainly, we do a hentai worth watching panel at conventions where we'll talk about the history of hentai anime. And, you know, one of the things I talk about obviously is Bible Black and,
right.
Yeah, the dub for that is pretty funny.
You know, it's funny you bring up Kitty Media. Here's a question for you. Back in the day, in the 90s anyway, it felt like the one everyone pointed to was cool devices, right?
Yes.
Everyone would talk about cool devices. That was the most shocking and controversial thing, and it was
so tame looking back at it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, do you think so? Like, look, I haven't set eyes on it in, I promise, I have not set eyes on it in a long time. Like, I haven't seen it, I don't think, since the early 2000s. Is it like, that is obviously not what people point to, but it feels like maybe Bible Black is the one that people point to now as the, like, not gateway drug, but like the one everyone knows about. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think Bible Black is sort of the synonymous one that sort of the casual anime watcher who doesn't watch hentai knows, oh yeah, Bible Black.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they will have heard of it.
Yeah, and I think sort of Legend of the Horror Fiend and La Blue Girl are in that category as well. Though maybe that's just dating me.
I think that's, I mean, not to be too blunt about it, but yeah, I think so. Like, I wouldn't expect, like, La Blue Girl especially, I would not expect people to know about that. Like, I would expect old-timer, like, the beardos in my, you know, the ones that I hang out with at anime conventions and talk about the old days, they remember La Blue Girl.
I remember seeing La Blue Girl and, like, one of the episodes, like, the girl's clitoris transformed into a penis and then, like, crazy stuff happened and I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I know back in the day people would talk about La Blue Girl a lot, but it seems to me that the times have changed and now the one that everyone knows is Bible Black. That's the one everybody has heard of.
And Kitty Media did publish that back in the day. They no longer had the license for it when we started talking with them, but it's something – that's a good example of a title we're looking at bringing back.
You'd like to – yeah, of course you'd like to pursue that.
Yeah, if for no other fact, then I think that it has – it's like such a – you know, almost historical title where it's like when they were first bringing over a lot of that hentai, it was almost like they brought over the most shocking stuff first.
Yeah, really.
And yeah, Bible Black was definitely.
Yeah. Well, it definitely is. Speaking of which, the next question is actually in this line. GD Nalk wants to know, with the announced expansion into Aerogay, how far back are you willing to go for licenses? Bible Black, Tsukihime. Now he's talking about Type Moon in here. And I would maybe put that in a different box from something like Bible Black. But let's take this as two parts. Something like the Bible Black game, would you be interested in pursuing that?
So I think that the Bible Black game. So Bible Black was original. I don't know if it was originally an Aerogay, but it has an Aerogay. I think maybe Jast or Manga Gamer or someone has published.
It's been published. Okay.
I don't think that game's been published, but I think like one of the spinoffs was Discipline, I think.
Oh, right. Okay.
I probably wouldn't pursue the Bible Black game because I think that when it comes to the games, like if me personally, I'm going to sit down and play an Aerogay, like it's not for the shock value. It's because I want to like feel some emotions, you know, like Fate Stay Night, which I think was another part of the question is like on the extreme opposite of Bible Black where.
Yeah,
it's like this great story, which has the original game has sex scenes sprinkled throughout it.
Then you're talking about publishing a Type Moon game, which is a completely different beast. Like, I would say that if Faku was interested in that, you should crowdfund it because you will make a tremendous amount of money. If you come out with a Kickstarter for Fate Stay Night in English, you will make quite a bit of money. And something tells me that maybe Aniplex, like, knows that.
I don't know. So we haven't pursued anything like Fate Stay Night. We do have some big licenses we're working on, but nothing in that category.
Mm.
I would say that because I haven't ever talked with Type Moon, but I would assume that because no one has done any Type Moon games like that, that there's probably a reason for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's one of those games that you would pursue if you were in games.
It seems to me like a Type Moon Kickstarter would easily outraise something like Clannad, you know, which did crazy, crazy numbers. I feel like any Type Moon would just blow it out of the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with Faco being so popular.
Exactly. But then you got to worry about, does Aniplex want this thing? Do they want a promoted Fate Stay Night Aerogay? Like, this is a porn game. Like,
pretend all that never happened.
Well, they do talk openly about how we want Fate to be mainstream. We want this to be a mainstream property. And I think they kind of have to maybe leave some of its, unfortunately, because of society being the way it is, they will feel as though they have to leave that in the past and are not interested in bringing it out here because they don't want people to associate Fate Stay Night with porn. You know, it's too valuable to them for people to associate it with porn, even though that mobile game, you're paying hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for racy, like PG-13 pinup shots of these girls. Like, it's close to erotic anyway, you know?
Yeah. And it's hard to fault them for it because you know, their strategy is working, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is working.
The mobile game is probably their biggest moneymaker ever.
Yeah.
We actually own a mobile game company as well. Well, not just mobile games, but we own a video game developer in Tokyo named Hanaji, which is Nosebleed.
Okay. Right.
The president is this very good friend of mine. He works very hard on some of the game stuff we do, but they've put out mobile games over the years. And I think we're about to release our latest mobile game. It's called Peko Peko Sushi. It's like a cute little 8-bit game where you manage a little sushi shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I am somewhat involved in the game side of things, but to bring it all the way back to the question, I would say Type Moon is probably off limits for everybody. I hope somebody one day is able to convince them to publish the original 18 plus visual novel in English. But as you said, you know,
good luck.
I don't think they're too interested in it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, that's just speculation on my part. I think the next time I interview Aniplex about any of this stuff, it'll be like, So,
yeah.
Are you interested in it? Because we made a point, like, we interviewed the director of Heaven's Feel, the movie. Mm-hmm. And Jacob asked, my husband Jacob asked about the porn, and the guy was like, I'm not saying no. Like,
really?
The story, if we feel like it needs to be in there, it'll be in there. Like, that's what he said. So, and it is kind of weird to me, the whitewashing of Fate Stay Night is a little strange, because
it was part of the plot, wasn't it? It was like the whole mana regeneration stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. There's all these jokes about the, you know, the worms and everything like that. Like, it's, you know, for sure. Like, it's definitely an arrow guy. It's interesting. All right, moving on from that, Project H Reader asks, how is Portland? You said you just moved to Portland, so how's Portland? And he wants to know your top five, that's a lot, top five places to eat.
Oh. Well, we moved out to Portland a little over 3 years ago in 2014. I moved here from Texas. I was previously working at BioWare Electronic Arts. And yeah, Portland's been great. I actually love this city now that I've been here this long.
Yeah.
And with us here, Dark Horse is here, Oni Press is here, IDW has an office here, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is here. There's tons and tons of comic artists here, both doing indie stuff like zines and webcomics, and even things for us and the other publishers. Like, Portland is an absolutely great city to live in if you're into comics, if you're an artist, or you're in the industry. So I love the city, and I hope that we can help to grow it into even more of a comic sort of capital.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, great places to eat. I like Grassa. It's an Italian pasta place. I'm Italian. They make their own pasta there. They like bake it and stuff. You can watch them do it when you eat. Great place. Highly recommend Grassa. Also, Brunch Box. They do the grilled cheese bun cheeseburger. So if you want to eat two grilled cheese sandwiches and a cheeseburger at the same time, you can go there.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll skip the rest of them.
Two is good.
Lots of good food in Portland.
Two is good, yeah. All right. Kunaragi asks, with Faku publishing its first original book soon, are there plans to work directly with other era manga artists, Japanese American or other countries, for more original Faku content?
Oh, that's a cool question. Yeah, last weekend we announced our first book from a non-Japanese artist. So on Faku, on the subscription, and I guess this wasn't true when we last spoke because the subscription wasn't live, but we also publish Western artists from America and Europe alongside the Japanese artists. So one of the artists we publish is this artist named GY, and he's been with us since almost the beginning of the Faku subscription. He's been doing like a Japanese style chapter every month or every 2 months. And we just announced his first book last weekend. And it's a really cool, I'm really proud of it because it's a really high quality book. And we get to go to Japan now and say, hey, are you interested in, you know, publishing this book from a Western artist in Japan, in Japanese, this adult manga? So I'm going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully I'll have a lot of fun like talking with Japan about that and making that happen. I hope that we publish more Western artists because, you know, I want to give, you know, that option to artists here that artists in Japan have. I think one of the reasons we don't see a lot of, you know, full form adult comics coming out of America and Europe and the West is there's no like career path for it outside of like doing Patreon and, you know, like sort of smaller indie things. Like there's no way to like I want to publish more Western artists.
Cool. What do you look for in a Western artist?
So typically what I look for is just something that I enjoy reading and I think looks good. We actually publish a non-Arrow Western series from an artist named AI. And it has no erotic content in it at all. It's almost like in the same vein as a title like Haruhi. Hmm. Haruhi would be. So yeah, we just look for good, you know, good content, good story, good art.
Cool. Seems reasonable. Along those lines, I like this question. Abby Battlespell wants to know, any advice for someone who wants to get into drawing boobs? And, you know, they mean they're being sort of flip about it, but they, in terms of business and payment, since it can be a pain creating adult content and business growth. So say, like, you want to become an erotic artist. What advice would you have for that person?
It's definitely difficult. You know, if you ignore the fact that, you know, none of the credit card companies will work with you out of the gate, which is true. Like, none of them will work with you. It's difficult to build up as an erotic artist in the West. Patreon is a really cool service that it's created that opportunity for a lot of artists and even models here, like, you know, 3D models, like real people, to do like sort of a content targeting adults that they previously didn't have a platform for. So my advice would be to just start and, you know, get your stuff out there, try to build up a following and start up a Patreon.
Okay. Yeah. Patreon. Although
it has its own issues.
Yeah. They're running into a lot of that stuff now, right? Yeah. Like Patreon and PayPal are both starting to fuck over adult artists.
Yeah. And it is fucked up. And I think that one of the things I would like to do longer term, if we have the resources, is to like provide a service for artists and models and whoever that isn't going to just bend over to the bank and PayPal.
It is kind of astonishing that there is not a financial service specifically for the adult sector.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's frustrating too.
It's like no one was like, I don't know how much money there is in that.
Yeah. And interestingly, you know, we've been really fortunate on Faku with our partners at the banks that we work with and whatnot. But early on, it was difficult to convince people to work with us, companies. So one of the things we were exploring was Bitcoin through a company called Coinbase. They're the largest like Bitcoin processor. And we were processing through them for a little while, so we were accepting Bitcoin. And then they actually disabled our account, and they said, oh, no, we can't work with adult content. And I was talking back and forth with the CEO of Coinbase, and I was like, doesn't that go against everything that, like, Bitcoin sort of stands for? Like, this anonymity, like, protection, like, not having to worry about, like...
The currency of the dark web is too good. Like, what?
I was like, what? Like, we're just like this little indie, like, you know, 2D anime porn publisher.
Like. Yeah. Like, what percentage of your daily transactions are on something similar to Silk Road? Like, that's what you asked the guy. Like, are people buying mushrooms and, like, illegal pornography with this? Because why are you denying me? it's a legitimate business.
it's shitty, I think, because like a lot of those companies start off as being like, oh, you know, we're like, you know, we're outside the system, you know, or not outside the system, but like they're a counterculture thing, you know, like
Bitcoin,
or this company Coinbase, like, oh, we're a counterculture thing. You don't have to, you know, you can be like a person in like Texas or something who's really into, I don't know, something that might get you in trouble in Texas, but it's perfectly legal. Like, one of Toshio Maeda's books is banned in Texas. One of the ones we actually have a license for, Demon Beast Invasion. It was banned in like the 80s or 90s.
Something. Sounds like something they would have done in the 80s or the 90s.
Yeah. Again, a really tame book in retrospect. And like back then, if you wanted to read that, like Bitcoin might've been maybe your only option to go and pay for it. I don't like that a lot of those companies start off as counterculture, and then like they get bigger, and then they're like trying to compete with MasterCard and like Visa and American Express, and they're like, oh, we got to shed all of our, it's frustrating.
Yeah, that's really, well, that's weird, because that means that originally the, we're counterculture, we're going to take in these clients that other places won't, it's just a smokescreen, and then once they get enough capital together, they abandon all those people. So what you need is somebody who's like dedicated to the counterculture and wants to help it.
Even Patreon is recently starting to turn their backs on creators who do non-traditional work. And it's a shame to see.
So you need someone with principles.
With principles, yes.
Yeah. That's what you need. All right. We got some questions here from the FACU Discord server.
Oh, cool.
Sent in by user Carrie. So thank you, Carrie, for collecting these and putting them together. So first one, what direction do you see FACU as a company taking in the future? Kind of, we've talked about this quite a bit, but maybe you could summarize.
You know, I think that I'm really proud of... the past 3 years, I've obviously grown a little bit as a person and age-wise, but a few of the things I've realized that I get the most satisfaction out of is sort of, first, I really like creating we created a company where we were able to like employ people and do things that we love with people who love the stuff we do. Like we're able to like, you know, like pay people and have health insurance and things like that. Like that's really cool to me that we're doing that. And then working with these Japanese artists who, I think I sat down with one of them a couple years ago. One of the artists we brought over, Dan Maxbo, as a guest. And he talked about how he would, whenever he Googles his name, it's just piracy results of his work and how like disheartening that was to him as a creator, because he had no recourse to stop it, to stop piracy of the work, to get it removed from Google, to do any of that. So giving artists like him both, you know, monetary support and actual like motivational support through like just having readership. You know, one of the things we do is we send comments on an artist's work to the artist. So we'll say, here's, you know, everything that everyone said about your work and how much they enjoyed it, or even what they didn't like, or what they hope you do next with the series. Sometimes the artist will come back and comment on FACU. So we'll have like a verified comment from a Japanese artist that we translated and they posted on FACU, which is cool. Like we published a book called Metamorphosis by Shindo L, and the scanlation of the book got like the title wrong, because it was just a scanlation. And the artist came back and said, oh no, the title is I think the scanlation was Emergence. And it's known throughout the internet as Emergence as a result. But the artist came back and said, oh no, it's Metamorphosis, because I was actually referencing Franz Kafka's book Metamorphosis, where that dude turns into a bug, except this is the story of like this school, this girl who like gets into like drug use, and like it's a downward spiral. So it's supposed to like parallel that. So we get really cool insights like that as a result of working closely with the artists.
Cool. Let's see here. So I guess that's one. The next question is, how has FACU changed your life? I guess that's one way.
Yeah, you know, I've got to meet, I've made lifelong friends. I'm very lucky to be able to do what I love every day.
Cool. And also asks, will there be more physical releases of Doujinshi?
So right now at Anime Expo each year, we typically do, we'll bring over an artist and do like a box set of their doujin works. Last year we brought Saitom. Last year we brought Meme 50. And the previous year we brought Saitom and Napata. And the year previous to that we brought Boshi. We've also brought Toshio Maeda. At those events, we typically do doujin sets or book print doujin. Outside of those events, I don't see us doing much printed doujin.
Okay. All right. And last two questions here from Because Japan. Should I stop hoping for a physical release of Hanafuda? If so, is it the content or the atypical dimensions of the book? So I don't know what's going on with this.
Yeah, so Hanafuda was our first really controversial title. It's this beautiful art book that involves some scenes that are just controversial in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was our fourth or fifth book we put out. I purposely chose it because it is both high art from it's from this artist Okama. He actually has a non-arrow manga series going right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Hanafuda. So it's like this controversial, really high quality art book. So both the actual Japanese art book is very printed, very high quality. So like it's hard to replicate. And the content is controversial, but yeah, we're planning a physical print of the book. It's going to be awesome. It's going to match the Japanese release, which is something we do with all of our releases. You know, Zach, have you had a chance to hold a FACU manga yet? I'm not even sure.
No, I have not.
Well, I will send you one.
Okay.
You know, all of our books, we emulate the Japanese quality almost one-to-one, or we strive for one-to-one, to the point where we've had Japanese publishers go, oh, we prefer like the FACU version, even though we're just sort of like trying to do the same thing. So we take the quality of our printing very seriously. So Hanafuda will happen. It's going to be super high quality, and as a result, it takes a lot of time to figure out.
So just a little patience.
Just a little patience, yeah.
All right. Last question, also from Carrie from the Discord server. How do you take your coffee?
I like my coffee black, but sometimes I'll sprinkle in a little sugar or cream. But yeah, I drink coffee every day. That's how I keep this going. Keep it all going.
Yeah, I have an unfortunate and maybe deadly diet soda addiction.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it'll probably kill me one day.
Well, I hope it doesn't. but yes, soda's dangerous. But
yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you stay healthy, though.
Yeah, I try. Yeah, I give it a shot. Anyway, listen, that kind of wraps us up. That's sort of all the questions we had. I can't thank you enough for stopping by. Congratulations on all of your success, and I wish you all the best for the next year.
Yeah, no, Zach, thank you for having me again. You know, when you had me on 2.5 years ago, we were in that transition, and it was hard to convince people that we were capable of doing it, and you guys were definitely one of the first who said you believed in us enough to have us on, to have me on the podcast, and I appreciate that. So hopefully we'll do another one of these in the future and talk about the next exciting thing that we're doing.
Well, I think that what your mission statement is, or at least what you personally have said to me and said on this show, and that what you're interested in is recognition for these artists that are marginalized by pretty much every aspect of society. And even like, you know, ANN doesn't really cover their work very extensively. And, you know, there are a large variety of factors that are responsible for that. But I think for a company like yours to come in and say, okay, we're going to try and maybe put some, shed some light on, give these people a recognition and let their fans access them, you know, like let their fans pay them, let their fans patron them directly. I think that's noble. I think that's good. And I think that's in service of the preservation and appreciation of art, and erotic art is art. So I think you're doing good shit. I think you're doing good shit. All right, man. Well, thanks a lot. And all right, that does it. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. You know, all those other places, right? Google Play Music and Stitcher and YouTube. Don't forget that one. Boy, I'm really off my game. Hey, we'll see y'all next week.